In the review of the course that Mickey put together, as I mentioned, I think, in the email that I sent out 2 weeks ago, he put this together in January of this year, thinking that the lesson that we were on, which was like lesson 23 or 22, was the last lesson. And when he looked further into the lesson book and saw that there were four or five more lessons, he realized that, oh, we're not done yet. But when we get to the end of this, you'll find that we kind of abruptly terminate because I haven't bothered to make any other slides past what he did, which was only through lesson 22 or so. So that's okay. And the idea that I have behind this, as we looked at beginning last week, was to just look at some of these topics and not go through every scripture that's there, but see if there are topics that either we don't remember too much about or we wanted to discuss some more, something that strikes your fancy, as it were, as we go through. So we covered this first slide last week about the preface in Luke and also John's introduction, the genealogies, and Zacharias and Jesus' birth, and then Mary visits Elizabeth, and then the birth and early life of John the Baptist. So we are just beginning to look at this particular chart, the third one, talking about the birth of Jesus. Now, of course, the birth of Jesus is mentioned a number of times. And let me see. Before I say something I ought not to say, I'm pretty sure it's mentioned a number of times. Yeah, so in Matthew, the second chapter, we have that. And though the reason I think he has Luke down here is much more extensive than the other Gospels. Wow. Let's see. So Mark doesn't have anything about the birth of Jesus, just has the beginning of his preaching. So that's what Mark does. And then Luke, of course, has a fairly extensive discussion of the birth of Jesus. And then the book of John does not, yeah. But the book of John really tells us who Jesus is to a large extent in the spiritual sense. So, but as we look in Luke, the second chapter, in the first 20 verses, we see a fairly detailed discussion of the birth of Jesus. We see that why did Joseph and his family, or family-to-be, as it were, why did they leave Nazareth and go down to Bethlehem? The census, right. So all the men were required to report back to their hometowns and to be counted in the census. What do you suppose the purpose of the census was?
Taxes.
Taxation, yeah. So that's why they went down there. It's a bit curious in some of the mentions here that it says when they came back from Egypt, for example, it says they went and dwelt in a town named Nazareth. Like, okay, but they just came from Nazareth. But it's just the way that it's said is all. But they did indeed, when they came back from Egypt, decided to live back in Nazareth. And then later on, of course, this gets well ahead of what we're looking at here. Later on, what did Jesus make his headquarters or hometown or whatever it is?
Capernaum,
right. It's not too far from Nazareth. Yeah, Randy.
I don't know if this was, if I'm jumping the gun, but I don't think I am either. This is what we're talking about. Matthew specifically emphasizes the fulfillment of prophecy.
The fulfillment of prophecy, yeah, in Matthew.
We see the fulfillment of prophecy sort of throughout the New Testament. Matthew kind of hammers on it, but I brought this up last week. Micah 5.
Micah 5.
Tells where he was going to be born. In Bethlehem, Ephrathah. So, there may have been more than one Bethlehem, but he was only born in one.
That's correct.
And that's this one.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to think that this could be anybody but him, since it says Micah 5, verse 2, but as for you, Bethlehem, and Ephrathah, two will be among the clans of Judah. From you, one will go forth from me to be ruler in Israel. His goings forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity. Therefore, he will give them And she who is in labor has born a child. Then the remainder of his brethren will return to the sons of Israel. And he will arise and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. They will remain, because at that time he will be great to the ends of the earth. This one will be our peace.
Okay.
So
yeah.
It's kind of, that can't be talking about anyone else.
No, right. No, nobody else, right.
And then, of course, Isaiah 7:14.
Isaiah 7:14.
Says, therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin will be with child and bear a son, and she will call his name Emmanuel. So, those are two prophecies that are just very important to what we're talking about here in the Gospels. Because we're told that he would be born of a virgin and in Bethlehem.
Yeah.
But you can see God's providence in, you know, the census was called by Caesar Augustus. God's using the king of Rome to make his plan come about.
Right. Okay.
Caesar calls for a census. That means all the men have to go back to their hometown. And that's what brings about in the days of those kings.
Exactly.
Daniel said in chapter 2.
Right. Yeah. God has all the years and months and days and hours picked out for all of these things. And he set everything to work in its proper time. And so it did. Yeah. Now, I was just looking at here in Micah chapter 4. Micah chapter 4, starting at the first verse, sounds very much like Isaiah chapter 2, isn't it? If I remember my... Yeah. So yeah, so in Isaiah chapter 2, starting at verse 2, it shall come pass in the latter days that the mountain of Jehovah's house shall be established on top of the mountains, and so on. So... And then Micah repeats the words, but in the latter days it shall come to pass that the mountain of Jehovah's house shall be established on top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it. So we see here that Micah, who wrote after, I want to say after the return, let me see, Micah, in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Okay, so this is in the late time of Judah, and which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. Okay, so it's before they were taken by the Babylonians, but not a whole lot. Well, of course, Manasseh came after Hezekiah, and Manasseh was around for quite a while, 56 years or something like that. Carolyn.
I have an unwritten likely from again preaching just before the fall of Samaria, and I wrote 735 to 700 BC-ish.
Okay, all right. So, and Isaiah, I believe, was significantly before that, though I have no real idea exactly when that was. No Mickey notes there, huh?
I wrote 750.
Okay.
A little bit earlier.
A little bit earlier. Okay. All right.
I mean, it's...
So Micah could have known Isaiah.
Northern kingdom fell in 722.
Oh, okay. And the...
And Isaiah was written around 750.
Okay. All right. So maybe 30-ish years. Yes, Jenny.
I mean, it's not inspired, but in the introduction to Micah in my Bible, it says, Micah prophesied in Judah during the reigns of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah about 750 to 700 B.C. at about the same time as Isaiah.
Oh, okay. 700 to 750 is quite the stretch. Yeah, it's an entire lifetime. So, but yeah, so they overlap some. So Micah and Isaiah had the same words in some instances to say to the people. And yeah, no indication of what might be special about him being a Morashtite. So I don't think it says anything about him being a priest or anything. He's just prophesying. All right. So yeah, the birth of Jesus definitely prophesied in various places in the Old Testament. And so as we've seen in Micah and also in Isaiah, we have prophecies of Jesus that are very, very specific. So, all right, so the birth of Jesus was shown to whom first, or the people that we see that first realized that there was something?
It was announced to the shepherds.
Right, but somebody else was already on their way. Okay, so the wise men were already on their way, and they were sort of inquiring around Jerusalem as to where he would be born, and then the annunciation was made to the shepherds on the day that Jesus was born. Linda?
The visit of the wise men is very likely quite a bit after the birth
yes.
of Jesus.
Right, right. We're going to get to that.
So.
That's unclear for us. Did I miss them, it being announced to them, or was it that they figured it out?
It says we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. I don't know that we can say necessarily that the star rose before he was born.
Yeah, there's no indication here. There's some annunciation to the wise men, kings, or whatever we want to call them. I think it says.
They call them wise men
in
the standard version.
Where?
Verse 7.
7, okay. Verse 7 of what?
Matthew 2.
Oh.
I've heard it said.
It also says it in verse 1.
But the star appeared early because it took them time to travel.
Yeah.
But then when they actually visited him, it says it was in a house.
Right.
Not
you're giving away all the story. So, yeah. All right. So, yeah, that's correct. So, so they went to Bethlehem because that's where Joseph was from. And so he and Mary went there, and she was, it says, great with child. And in verse 7 of Luke chapter 2, it says that she brought forth her newborn son, or her firstborn son, I should say, and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them at the inn. So that's the point that we'll make as we come along. So then it was announced to the shepherds. They went in and saw him, and said that in verse 12 it says you should find a babe wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger. So the story here is about him in the manger. And so they went to see him, and then they told other people about it. And there were some they mentioned some sort of prophecy also. It says, but Mary kept all these sayings, pondering them in her heart, in verse 19. So they went back out in the fields. We're in Bethlehem, which is like about 5 miles south of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is in the mountains, about the same, well, we mostly call them hills. They're about at the same elevation that we are. As a matter of fact, they're at approximately the same latitude that we are, as I recall. And so the climate there is very, very similar to what we have here. It's at the best an arid climate, at least where they were, and is desert in some areas. They get, of course, more rain because they're much, much closer to a body of water than we are. but if the shepherds were out grazing their sheep, cattle, and whatever at that time, then what time of the year would it have been? Would it have been the dead of winter? There would be no forage for their sheep. And how do sheep eat?
They graze.
They graze, yes, but when they graze, what do? They pull it up by the roots. So it takes a long time to regrow a pasture that's been eaten by sheep. Whereas cattle munch it. They don't pull it up. They of course, if you've seen buffalo grazing, you see they seem to pull everything up too, but they're trying to get through 16 feet of snow to do that. Anyway, but so the thing is that it would have to be, what did you say, James, sometime in the spring? Or most likely early summer.
Sometime they would be able to get the food to eat.
Yeah, right. So it ends up then being just like here, that in the dry season it all dries out, and that makes the food less nutritious. It's still available, but it's not as nutritious. The stuff that's green is the stuff that brings nutrition. Of course, one of the reasons that vegetarian type animals have to eat so much is that because there is very little nutrition in vegetables, as it were, in grass and things like that. So that's why it says that elephants have to eat 2 tons of leaves or whatever a day in order to keep themselves going. I just saw something about that the other day. It wasn't 2 tons, but it was quite a bit. Because there's very little nutrition in plants. What? Rhinoceri?
Mm-hmm.
What about them?
That's what we saw
from the Discovery Channel or whatever.
Oh.
Talking about how much they had to eat.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and then the elephants cross the Zambezi River to get to an island with a bunch of growth on it, essentially, from what their implication was, that they essentially denuded the forest and then had to move on to somewhere else. So anyway, that the birth of Jesus, it's not possible that it could have been in the winter, like so many people think that it was, because as their climate is very similar to this, it would have been much too cold for the sheep to be out and grazing. They would have been in their sheep pens and being fed by forage rather than out grazing. And, of course, the shepherds would have found it rather cold out there, too. But, of course, if you're out shepherding, you do what you do. But, anyway, it would appear that the birth of Jesus was looks like here, anyway, sometime in the spring or summer, probably early summer. So, because there was forage for the sheep. So, when Jesus was 8 days old, then what did they do?
Circumcised him and named him.
Right. So where did they do that?
Temple.
It seems like it's in the temple, but but it says in verse 22, as opposed to verse 21, it says, and when the days of their purification according to the law of Moses were fulfilled, how many days is that for a male?
It's not
for a male. For a male child.
It's seven. For a male child. So that's the reason why he was circumcised on the eighth. But for Mary's purification, it would have been 40 days.
Okay. I thought it was 30 days. And then if it was a female, it would be 60 days. But anyway, it's longer for a female. But it talks about the fact that the 8 days were fulfilled for circumcising him, and he was called Jesus at that time, because that's what he was called by the angel before he was even conceived. And then it says in verse 22, when the days of their purification, according to the law of Moses, they brought him up to Jerusalem. So that would have been the days of, according to the days of their purification. I'm thinking that that would be the days of Mary's purification. And then they would have brought him up to the temple. So I'm thinking that what we've got is the naming of Jesus after 8 days, and then they bring him up to the temple, and they meet the two people there who are kind of big players in this. And who are those two people that they meet?
Simeon.
Anna. Anna, correct. I'm not sure that we could say that Anna actually saw Jesus. Or is it, where's Anna? Simeon, spirit, the child, blessed, is set. And there was one in 36, verse 36 of Luke chapter 2. There was one Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was of great age, having lived with the husband 7 years from her virginity, and she had been a widow even unto 84 years, which is, according to my calculations, 84 years. Who departed not from the temple, worshiping with fastings and supplications night and day, and coming up at that very hour, she gave thanks unto God and spake of him to all them that were looking for the redemption of Jerusalem. And so it says that she spoke about him, talking about Jesus. There's no indication here as to whether she saw him, but I mean, I can't imagine that she would be there if she didn't see him. So, or if she was there. I can't imagine that she wouldn't see him. Certainly she would want to see him. Now, when they were done there, having accomplished, it says, all things that were according to the law of the Lord, they returned unto Galilee to their own city, Nazareth. So does that mean that they left the temple and went straight to Nazareth? Right. So, but we still have the wise men to visit. All right. Now, I think it's because simply there's no mention of them here in the book of Luke that we would be unclear on the timeline based on the book of Luke. If we go to the book of Matthew, right? That's where in 2 and 7, was it mentions them? No? Yes? Maybe? No. Wise men starts in chapter 2 and verse 1. From the east came to Jerusalem and asked Herod, where is he that's born king of the Jews? And so we see that the shepherds visited him on the day of his birth, after the Annunciation by the angels, and they visited him in the manger. So in the barn, or whatever we want to call it. He wasn't in the house. But verse 11 of Matthew chapter 2. Carolyn, you want to read verses 10 through 12?
When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. After coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell to the ground and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left for their own country by another way.
Okay. So notice now, I don't know how important that is, but it says in verse 11 in the American Standard, it says, saw the young child. Okay. So notice that they are, number one, they've come to the house. So he's no longer in the manger, in the barn or whatever. So they're apparently have been there long enough that people that have come down and filled up the inn, for, the census, some of them at least have gone, and so now there's room at the inn so they can be there. Obviously they need to be there for the days of Mary's purification, which you say is 45 days for a 40 days for a male child. And so they're there for, you know, well over a month and a half or so, to be there. And so in this time it would appear that this then is when the wise men visited him. Because right here, it's not here, it was back in Luke. It says, let me get back to, no, I'm in Luke. It was in Matthew. Go ahead, Linda.
It's Matthew. Are you talking about Herod killing the children?
Pretty much.
Okay, that's in Matthew. And chapter 2, starting in verse 16, when he saw he was mocked of the wise men, he was exceeding wroth and sent forth and slew all the male children that were in Bethlehem and in all the borders thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time when he had exactly learned from the wise men.
Right. So in Matthew 2, we have the appearance of the wise men in the house with them. And then they were told not to go back by Jerusalem. And now it says that the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, arise, take the young child and his mother, and flee unto Egypt, and be there until I tell thee, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. And he arose and took the young child and his mother by night, and departed into Egypt, and was there until the death of Herod. Oh, and then when we get over, back over to Luke chapter 2, where was it? Oh, in verse 39 of Luke chapter 2, and we finished talking about Anna, and then in verse 39 it says, and when they had accomplished all things that were according to the law of the Lord, they returned unto Galilee to their own city Nazareth. Now, how do we reconcile that? So the Lord said to them, while they were in Bethlehem, go to Egypt. And it says that Joseph got up in the night, or took them in the night, and went to Egypt. And here it says they went to Nazareth. So which did they do?
Egypt first and then Nazareth. It sounds like that was a law of the Lord for them.
Right. Okay. So, you know, people say, see, you got a contradiction here. It says, here it says they went to Nazareth, and here it says they went to Egypt. Which did they do? But the fact of the matter is that we don't have a set timeline here. Between verses 38 and 39 of Luke chapter 2, there's no absolute way to tell what time it is. I mean, it looks like it's the same day, but it's not, because they didn't go to Nazareth. They went back to Bethlehem, because they were in Bethlehem when they were warned to go to Egypt, and so they did. And when they came back from Egypt, where'd they go? They went to Nazareth, right? So we have the timeline here. It's just a little circuitous when we look at just one book. That's why we study all four of the Gospels, not just one. Because circuitous. I'm sure it's a word you will use frequently. Right. So when we look at the passage, the sum of thy word is truth, we understand that we have to look at it all. We can't just start pulling things out and say, oh, well, that didn't work very well. Yeah, let's go jump back to Matthew because we like that better. No. All right. So the wise men visit, they go into Egypt, and then they return. Did you have your hand up?
Yeah.
scratching my ear.
Oh, all right. So say something anyway.
Okay. Okay, I'm just going to say that they used the term that he was a young child rather than saying he was an infant
right.
or a baby.
Yeah.
So,
I haven't looked that up to see if there's a difference between child and baby, but Jenny has done extensive research on this.
It means all of that.
Oh.
So it is a little child, an infant, a little one. It is mostly used for a younger child, perhaps 7 years old or younger, but some have applied it to a son or daughter up to 20 years old. So there's a bit of a range there, but it has been used for infants up to...
infants up to 20 years old.
Infants up to 20 years old. Born, a child recently born, a more advanced child, or a mature child.
A mature child,
so,
okay. All right.
Any of those things.
Well, we look at... is it the ruler of the synagogue, Jairus, was it, in Capernaum, that asked Jesus to come and heal his little daughter? And when we get to the healing part, we find that she's actually 12 years old. And most of them would look at her and say, well, that's not a little child. But, you know, it all depends on how the society looked at them at that time. You know, at 12 years old, she's almost a marrying age right there. So, but... and then there's other times when we see discussion about the young child or something like that, and it turns out later on that they're up in their upper single digits or even teenagers. Sometimes, not very frequently, but yeah. So I'm not sure we can plant a stake on young child being any different than infant, but it certainly appears that when God wants to use infant, he uses infant. When he wants to use young child, he uses young child. And there may be nuances in the language that we don't quite understand. So, but it does appear that it at least indicates some sort of age to Jesus other than a newborn. Though I'm not sure, Alina, what you'd consider a newborn, whether that's up to, you know, 3 months old or what. But no, I'll consider it a newborn until she's two. That's it. So, no? Okay. Okay. So, different terminology is used, though, to indicate that there may be certainly a difference here between when the shepherds visited and when the wise men visited. All right. They went into Egypt. They returned subsequently to Nazareth. Any other comments or discussion about that? That kind of goes through the first, 4 points there about the birth of Jesus, really. And then continuing on in Luke, the second chapter, starting in verse 40, we zip right through Jesus, a good portion of the early part of Jesus' life. So now, pardon?
I said, now he's a boy.
Yeah, now he's a boy. Yeah, what does it say? It says, and the child grew and waxed strong, filled with wisdom and the grace of God. So it just mentions that he was a child. So nothing there to indicate. Jenny, you've done extensive research on this also.
No.
As a
side note, when the shepherds go to see the baby, that is a different word.
When
they go to see... the child. So the one where the shepherds are going to see him is Brephos, which is an unborn or newborn child.
Oh, okay.
And then the other one was not that.
All right, so a child is not a newborn or unborn. Okay. All right. Interesting. So I guess God has a reason for the words that he uses. So we should probably... pay attention to that. All right. The visit to Jerusalem at age 12. Between verses 39 and 40, we see that there is a 12-year gap in the life of Jesus. Now, just to discuss this, pardon me?
At least 10.
Yeah, right, at least 10, yeah, because Herod went and slew which children? Those two and under, right? So he thought that the child could have been born as much as 2 years ago from whenever he slew the children. So that could mean that that the wise men came to Bethlehem, you know, quite a ways after his birth. But, I mean, he slew children all the way down to newborns. So, so anyway, we see a gap in the chronology between 39 and 40. And so, but as we think about Jesus and his family, what do we know about his family? Linda?
His father was a carpenter.
His father was a carpenter.
And he had several siblings.
Several. We can count pretty much accurately, approximately, how many siblings he had. How many brothers did he have?
Four.
Four. He had four brothers. And what do they say about his other siblings?
Sisters.
Yes, and his sisters, not only are his sisters with us, his sisters are all with us. Generally, if you were to say all, it wouldn't mean two, at least in the English language. So I get the idea that if they use the term all, and I didn't look up to see where that verse is, but if they use the term all, then I'm thinking that there were at least eight children in that family. So there's Jesus, four brothers, and probably at least three sisters.
Matthew 13:56
talks, and you want to read that for us?
Well, I'll do 55 first.
Oh,
is
sure.
Not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary? And are not his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? And are not all his sisters with us? Where then did this man get all these things?
Okay. And in another place, in the same instance, they call him, isn't this Jesus the carpenter? So it would appear that he learned his father's trade. so, but I think it's interesting to note that this was Mary's first child. The first child of perhaps eight, maybe more. And so that means that Jesus is the oldest brother in the house. That means that he's kind of in charge of the house when daddy's not around. It appears that at some time daddy was no longer there. So Joseph died or went away or was taken off to prison or who knows what, but Joseph doesn't appear to be around later on as we read about things. We only see him in the birth and the prophecy of Jesus, the visit of the angel to Mary and the discussion with Joseph about that. So it would appear that later on in Jesus' life, Joseph was not in his life. You can only assume that he died. No mention of it. Apparently God didn't feel a need to make a mention of it, so he didn't. But I think it's interesting to think of Jesus as the oldest boy in the household. So he had a lot of responsibility as far as family goes. He had things that he needed to do as perhaps even the man of the household if his father, you know, died fairly early after the eighth child or something like that. So he had to take care of the family. And so he did. I think, right here though, in verse 41, when Jesus is 12 years old, it says what? His parents went every year. So we know that Mary and Joseph, that Joseph was still alive at this time when he was 12 years old. No indication of how old his brothers and sisters were. They may have all been born by now. They may be, you know, Mary may be great with child again as they walked in Jerusalem. Who knows? But, so they went to Jerusalem every year. And so he was 12 years old. And they just abandoned him in Jerusalem. So they walked how many days?
They left 1 day.
Yeah, they walked 1 day.
And then they came back and they looked
for three. For three, right. So they how could they just leave their child behind? Their 12-year-old. Maybe they didn't like him. But they went back and they looked for him for 3 days, right? So I'm sure they liked him. But the thing is that they weren't just traveling, one can assume, by themselves. That would not be a safe thing to do in their country at that time, coming all the way from Galilee down to Jerusalem in Judea, or in Judah, I should say. And so they would have probably traveled in a large family unit. We realize that Elizabeth and Zacharias were part of their family. They lived in Judah somewhere. And, of course, Jesus is 12 years old. Elizabeth and Zacharias may be dead by now. We know John is, or will be soon anyway. and, well, soon, another 15 years. So Elizabeth and Zacharias may still be around. They have other family around. It doesn't say where Mary is from, but if Joseph lived in Nazareth and they got engaged and married there, then one might think that Mary herself was from somewhere in that area, in the Nazareth area. So she probably had a bunch of family, and they would have gone down with family and friends to Jerusalem at the time appointed here, which it says, I went into a different page.
It was the Passover. That was a time of a major
influx of people
into Jerusalem at that point right. in time.
So everybody and their cousin is going to Jerusalem at this time. Carolyn.
Verse
44
tells it. They supposed him to be in the caravan when a day's journey, and they began looking for him among their relatives and acquaintances. So they've got, I have these pictures of like wagon train only because we studied that a lot in school, and there's all these people traveling together, and you assume that somebody else is watching your child or visiting a cousin or whatever.
You know good and well that if he's got his cousins and friends and stuff, all those people around, that the kids are wanting to stay with one another, generally speaking. Unless he's a mama's boy, and has to hold on her apron strings all the time. But anyway, they would have, the kids probably would have been all together running around, and they thought, well, he's over with Aunt so-and-so or cousin whatever, and we'll find him. And then when they go to look for him for dinner or something like that, then he's gone. Linda?
He's also 12 years old.
He's also 12 years old.
He's not a talker.
Right.
So that's...
He's not a baby that needs to be looked after. He's 12. So he's probably hanging around with the other 12-year-olds.
And it is that they went every year, so he's used to the, time to go.
Yep, here we go. Right. So, but he decides on his own to stay behind in Jerusalem. And here's where we see the first indication, to us anyway, that he knows who he is. Now, in the context here, it indicates that Mary remembered all these things and is remembering back to the things that she had heard from the angel and the prophecies that she'd heard from the shepherds and the discussion that they had with the wise men and such like as that, that 12 years ago, there was a big hoorah about what was going on with the birth of this baby. And it says that Mary kept these things in her heart. So, that's an interesting thing there in and of itself. And so we see that Mary has an inkling of all these things. And then when they finally find Jesus, where do they find him?
In the
temple. And what was he doing? Say what?
In his father's house.
In his father's house. Yeah. What was he? He was what? He was listening to the teachers and asking them questions, right? A 12-year-old asking what are called today rabbis, asking them questions. Yeah, Randy.
Verse 47 says that they answer him as well.
Oh, yeah, that's right. 47. Yeah, right. Yeah, after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers. My footnote, what's footnote 11 say? 14. Doctors, it says. This is another alternate translation. Pardon?
And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers.
Right.
I wrote a note in my margin that I'm certain is Mickey. It says he was befuddling the elders.
That's not your word? Oh, okay. All right. Did you spell it right?
I hope so.
Bumfuzzling. We'll have to look that up. Yeah. All right.
What's the Greek word?
The Greek. Maybe that is Greek. Yeah. Yeah. Both hearing and asking questions, and all that heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. So his parents, so that would be Mary and Joseph, it says, were astonished. What's verse 48? Were astonished. Is that what you've got? Okay. Everybody's got astonished. All right. We're astonished. And said, so said, son, pardon? Yeah. And so they say here, son, and I have a footnote that says Greek child. Did you see a word, Jenny, or can you see a word that looks familiar there? 48 in the middle. Son, why did you do this to us?
This is son-in-law. Why have you treated us so?
It is a different word from the other two.
Oh, good.
It's a child, a descendant, or an inhabitant.
Oh, all right. Yeah, the word, a descendant or an inhabitant. Remember that there are sometimes when, at least through as we go through the American Standard Version, that somebody who is relatively young, like Jesus, will refer to people as child. And that inhabitant thing is interesting. So, all right, so we got all the way through this whole slide.